Blog Talk Radio.
Right.
Truthful Tuesdays right here on Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. I am Sandy Rogers, and it is my extreme pleasure to serve as your hostess for this evening. I get so excited every Tuesday to present this show because I'm gifted with just the absolute most precious experts in their fields, and it's such an honor for me to introduce them to you as they share their passion and the work that they accomplish on a day in and day out basis. So tonight is no different, and you're going to be just really so amazed to get the information that's coming through our guest tonight. But before we do that, because you know sometimes I get ahead of myself, but there's a couple of things that we do to get ourselves in the correct energy level so that, you know, we're all ready to receive this powerful, powerful message. So the first thing we do is we give thanks to the ancestors, to all of our ancestors for being with us always, and especially on Tuesdays as we discuss issues that are not ordinarily talked about in an open environment or an open setting. You know, you may hear it being whispered in corners of the room, but not open the way that we do. And we understand here at Life, Love, and Wellness that it's time for us to be very vocal about the things that we deal with day in and day out. So that's what we do. So ancestors, we give you the credit because you give us the courage and the tenacity to stand on your shoulders for strength. And we trust that you got us. You got our fronts, our backs, our tops, and our bottoms. And we just move forward in that energy of knowing that you're helping us to stand straight and telling the truth. So we love you. We love you now. And we love you forever and ever. Ashe. The next thing we do, we move right into affirmative reading, a prayer, so to speak, as to allow ourselves just to kind of exhale through any of what's happened to us today, be it good, bad, or indifferent, just to kind of center and focus ourselves. And this comes from my actual writings that you can find at revsandy.wordpress.com. And today's message that I'm reading is called New Manna. Yes, I am connected to you. I feel your heartbeat as my own. I sense your true worth as a child of God Goddess. I honor you and I celebrate you. I am you and you are me. The same breath of creation is in you as it is in me. The blood that rushes and flows through my body temple is the same as yours. Our lifeline is one in the same. For the source that calls my being is the exact same one for you. There is new hope today, new hope for world peace, new hope for manifesting the desires of our collective hearts, new manna that declares our oneness is indivisible and strong. Together we create a new world order that accepts the gift that each comes to add to the collective whole. New manna is mine today. I feast on the goodness of oneness. I thank God Goddess for my life and the life of all others around me this day. I am connected and I am loving it. I love without expectations or constraints. This new manna is of God Goddess, of higher consciousness, of oneness. I celebrate my life and your life. And again, that is from my daily inspirational messages that come out every day. And you can find it at revsandy.wordpress.com. It's all about life. It's all about love. And it's all about wellness. So tonight's show is called The Community Impact on Homelessness, which features a very, very good friend of mine, Ty Asha. And we're going to be going right into her conversation after we have our music break. But I just wanted to make the announcement. Audience, you know you're always invited to be a part of the discussion. Our intention is that any and all voices that choose to be heard have a chance to participate in the conversation. So our call-in number here, you must call in. So if you're on another type of device, if you have something you would like to add to the conversation, questions, whatever, you must call from a phone. The number here is 516-531-9819. And to speak live on air, what is, you would just push 1, and it lets us know that you wish to speak live on air. Now, once your line is open, if you're waiting and you're just sitting, just put your phone on mute so that there's no background noise. The microphones are extremely sensitive, and we have quite a few of our listeners, our regular listeners, that like to listen to the shows repeatedly, or they listen to it at another time because this may be a little late for some. And so we just want to make sure that we have the best quality of sound. And if you're interested in listening to any of the shows or all of the shows, going back through our database, you may do that by just going to www.blogtalkradio.com/Sandy Rogers. And that's SandyRogers. So thank you. Thank you for being here. You're listening to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. We're going to take us a quick music break, and when we come back, I'm going to be bringing on Ty Asha, and we're going to delve into this homelessness. We're all familiar with it, but we've got some news to share with you. We'll be right back.
Why do you do it? Why do you do it? Why do you do it? Some people ask ask me, why are you doing this thing? How come you're playing music for people? Getting up early in the morning just to catch a plane, a bus, and a train, going insane, fanning a flame. So then why? Is it for love? Is it for self-expression? Is it to combat depression? Is it to make people happy? I mean, I love it. I can hear it. I can listen to somebody smile at me.
But when I'm happy, when I'm sad, when I'm surly, and when I'm glad, when that sunshine turns to rain, and I just can't stand the pain, and I feel I'm going insane till I get back home again. When I think I can't compete, and I just can't find the beat. When I'm old, when I'm young, when I finally saw the sun, I sure hope we have some fun, spreading love to everyone. So before I tip my cup, I just wanna pick somebody up. Pick somebody up. Mm-hmm. Pick somebody up.
Y'all know that was Raul Madone, Pick Somebody Up. And I played that because that's what our guest tonight, that's what she does. That's just her. She does it. It's just a part of who she is, right? So welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. And remember, you're welcome to call and chat live on air with us if you would like at 516-531-9819 and just push 1 to signal you wish to speak live on air with us. So it's all about life, it's all about love, and it's all about wellness. So tonight's show is called The Community Impact on Homelessness, and it's featuring, like I said, a very good friend of mine, Tyasha. She's an educator and a quantum activist. Tyasha opens the month on homelessness, discussing her powerful tested approach to healing and correcting the mindset about the situation in our community. And, you know, that's a great big one, right? Changing the mindset in our community. Her mission is to use the arts to enlighten everyone about the natural healing mechanisms within that allows them to manifest their highest frequency. Shame, blame, and judgments are thrown out the door and replaced with acceptance, peace, and newfound ideas that transform situations. She's armed with a very deep and strong faith in what she believes is honorable to all people. She forges ahead with no thought of failure. What she accomplishes is saving lives. She is saving lives and people with hope for a brighter future. She is consistently connecting with those out in the streets of Southwest Atlanta, nurturing and holding space for all those she encounters. For her organization, CANNA Help You Heal, CANNA, CANNA Help You Heal, is in its infancy stage, yet that does not hinder Tyasha in any way whatsoever. She faces and handles the needs that are brought directly by the people she runs into on the street. So it is my honor and my pleasure to welcome you, introduce you to Tyasha. She's my business associate. She's my friend. I've been with her in the radio. She's a beautiful radio host. She's a mother. She's a learner. She is a lover of people, and she just has the utmost respect for all. So welcome to the show, Tyasha, and I'm so thankful that you had time on your schedule to come and have a chat with us tonight.
Thank you for having me, Reverend Sandy. I really appreciate the invitation and listening to all that. You know, I kind of want to drop my shoulders and head like, no, I'm not all that. But
yes,
God has
are.
Placed me in a position to be able to just be myself, and just
yes.
being myself has been what forged that connection with people.
Beautifully said, because it's true. You know, you're such a humble individual, and I do agree that that is what people see in you. You know, they may not even know you in the flesh, but they know you, and they just gravitate to it. I've seen it, you know, time and time again.
Well, you know, the title Quantum Activist, I didn't take it lightly, but it came from the show that you and I did with Dr. Tashima Haynes, and when she
mm-hmm.
talked about the light codes and how we receive those codes, because that is the goal, really, is to enlighten everyone to the light within themselves, so that they could be their best self. And when we look at things on the quantum level, the smallest, most minute level, and we start to see that, you know, our cells are aligned with the divine, then we know that nothing can stop us. There are no limits. The only limitations we have are in our minds and in our cells and the way we've been programmed throughout our lives.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful way to put it. So that word quantum is pretty much a relatively new word that's, I think, within our community that we're working with as far as descriptions. And it's such a powerful word, though, you know. And I'm glad that you're using it to describe the work that you're doing.
Well, I definitely have to credit, you know, Dr. Tashima for awakening that in me, because, you know, I tend to have analysis paralysis and look at the tiniest detail of things, and that's been somewhat of a gift. That's what most people say, hey, you're detail-oriented, you have the information. But when you get into that quantum level of how you speak to yourself and yourselves and how that manifests in your life, you begin to experience changes. You know, they say, well, you can change your mindset, but do you actually change within yourselves? And I can't wait to work with Dr. Haynes later on in getting my body the way I need it to be. But to the topic that you brought up tonight, when you first sent it to me, I thought it said the community impact of homelessness. And so I was prepared to talk about the trash and, you know, things like that. But it's actually the community impact on homelessness. And that put it in a different viewpoint, because the community can impact our homeless population. And like you said, I meet people just in my comings and goings. And just to give a little brief history of how I ended up interacting with the homeless, I'm sure I probably did it before I came to Georgia. As a little girl in Connecticut, I would walk through downtown and see all the empty buildings and wonder, why are we not housing the homeless people? Why can't they live here? Why can't they have showers here or whatever? But when I came to Georgia, I was 18 years old, and I was a young college student dating another young student, and we couldn't afford, you know, to get on MARTA sometimes, so we would walk. And we have walked all over the city from Buckhead to the West End. And
wow.
So I never felt afraid of the homeless people. If someone said, hey, do you have a dollar? I didn't mind. And one of my first interactions that I recall being a positive one with a homeless person here in Georgia, I was on MARTA, and I was on my way to work, and he said, hey, do you have a couple of dollars so I can get some coffee? It was a cold day, and I gave it to him. And the person I was with at the time, they said, why would you do that? They're just going to go buy some drugs. Well, I had to buy coffee for the office that day. So when I got off the train, I went to the coffee house, and guess who was in line? He had gotten there before me, and he was counting out his change so he could get a coffee. And I said, you know what? Let him get two coffees and a donut. And, you know, just the ability to be able to do that,
yeah,
it made a difference for him and for me. And it made
right.
a difference in my dealings with that person, because I'm like, you see how you think about people? I don't think I want to deal with you anymore. You know, so, you know, thank you again for having me. I'm a little nervous, but I'm so honored and humbled, and I love the way you open up your show with giving homage to the ancestors and to the divine, to everyone that came before that does this work or did this work, and that legacy lives on through you.
Yeah, because I tell you, sometimes, man, you know, you'd be wanting to be like, oh, no, not again. You know, I'm going to get this up next month or next year. And then you just, like, keep on plugging. But I know that it's so important and so necessary for individuals to have a show that they can listen to that's based in truth. You know, like, we ain't trying to sell nobody nothing. We ain't trying to get you to become a member of nothing. We just want you to hear different mindsets, you know, on the things that we deal with day in and day out. And then you get to make your own choice, you know. So we ain't trying to change nobody into nothing or, you know, any of that. So, but you brought up that story about the guy and the coffee. I know one day I was on my way home from work, and you know how, well, I'll say I have in the past, I've tried to ignore the people on the street that's asking for money, you know. And but this day I wasn't feeling it. You know, I was really feeling like a part of everything, like what I read in the beginning, you know, this new mana that's out here that connects us all. And so this guy, he said, do you have any money? And I said, you know what? I said, I'm just as broke as you are. I said, you should be trying to give me some money. And then the next time I stop, you know, you can give me a dollar or 25 cents or something. And we had the biggest laugh in the middle of the street, you know, and people were looking at me like, why is she stopping talking to this man? You know, why is she holding up traffic? That guy is obvious, whatever was going through their head. I'm putting words in people's mouths now, but it was the facial expressions of them. And he said, you know what, miss? He said, the next time you come down this way, I'm going to have something just for you. So I got a chance to honor him, you know, made his day because I didn't ignore him and look the other direction or, you know, look over him or around him like he didn't exist. And so I found in that simple gesture, you know, just joking with him, you know, it made his day. So.
And that is the community impact on homelessness, first seeing them as a person, seeing them. When I say quantum, as above, so below, God is in me and God is in you, and I'm not here to change anybody. And the word educator and teacher, you know, those words go with the connotation that you've mastered something. No, I'm still working on seeing the humanity in myself and the divinity in myself. But that has what has been the connection. And what has been able to, I did not know this was the work I wanted to do. And for anybody who's listening, Can I Help You Heal is C-A-N-N-A, and it did start out as CBD education. So that's where Canna came from. But now can a piece of art, excuse me, can a conversation, can a song, can a thing, whatever that thing that you can offer that person, help them heal. Can A help you heal? So the things that I offer are the things that I use, and I'm not here to sell anything, but I'm here to remind everyone of their divinity, their humanity, and to see that in the others. And if we do that, we can have a strong impact on homelessness, because for a lot of people, and not all of them, some of it is a choice. Some of it is, you know, circumstances, situations. Some of it is mental health diagnosis. But the first step is seeing them and not pretending that they don't exist.
Yeah, that's a big one right there. And I know this associate of mine was complaining about, it's been a few years back too, about the people under the overpasses, you know, and she was just, too upset that they were near her apartment, you know. And I'm like, where else would you have them to go? It's winter, it's cold, at least, you know, they're out of the elements. Well, I just don't think they need to be, you know, that close to where people live. And I just, that was like the end of our relationship with one another, because I thought that was so cold and callous, you know, like, man, you like 2 hours away from being
too
homeless, your doggone self. Exactly, right?
And that's one of the things, like, For Can I Help You Heal? The intention at some point is to build a Earthship community center. And for those who don't know what an Earthship is, it was started out in Taos, New Mexico by a gentleman whose name escapes me, but he was an architect and an engineer, and he is. He's still living. And he wanted to create self-sustainable homes and reduce waste. So he did that by using, you know, what was available, which was tires, bottles, and cans, to create these homes that have their own agriculture, aquaponics, you know, water, rainwater reclamation system, an in-house greenhouse, solar panels, everything to be self-sustained. And he also has a retrofitting program for, you know, older houses. So my goal, there's an Earthship in North Georgia, but my goal is to have an Earthship, whether that's built from scratch or retrofitted, where, and this idea came about just cleaning up the community down here in Southwest Atlanta, being at a neighborhood cleanup, and saying, why can't we have something like this and not just using these tires and bottles and cans to build a house, but to create art, to create stools, to create, you know, I look at how to upcycle and recycle things. So that's the long-term vision, to have it be a community center where people can come and learn how to grow herbs and learn, you know, perhaps what herbs are best for their condition. As you know, you and I study a little bit into the herbs. You know a lot more than I do, you know.
Right.
But that's the long-term vision, and that's been, you know, my pitch for the past few years when I've gotten in the room with the money talkers, the money makers, the money shakers, you know. But it's not about the money. It is about the impact. And just to give you an example, I was driving a rideshare program just yesterday, and I had a pickup early in the dawning. I had an apartment complex, and I went there, and I waited, and I waited, and I wasn't where I was supposed to be. So I went over to the, you know, you could see on the dot, on the map, the dot where the person is. So I went over to where he was on the dot, and he was at the welcome center of this apartment complex, and he had all kind of, he had a big bag and, you know, the little cart that you take to the grocery store if you have, you know, you're going to walk back. He had that metal cart, that wire frame cart. He had a wire frame cart, you know, and it was filled up with stuff that was kind of covered in a tarp. And so the wait was longer than, you know, what the app allows, but I waited because I really wasn't sure I was at the right place at first. So, you know, I kind of waited to even say I arrived until I found him. So I waited for a long time while he got himself together, and he got in and he started talking about his situation. With he's like, man, I'm not coming back. You know, some people choose homelessness rather than live in a toxic situation, you know.
Okay.
So it was really interesting. I had a long ride with him, 20, 30 minutes. And most of the time I just listen to my music. I don't really talk to the passengers too much unless they want to talk to me. And he wanted to talk, you know.
Okay.
And so it was interesting to hear him talk about how he'd rather, you know, go out and not know where he's going than to deal with what he was dealing with at home. And not to pass judgment or anything, but he was living with his mother, or she was living with him. But he went into the history, and, you know, and I said, well, you know, sometimes moms don't know how to ask for help, you know.
Mm-hmm,
he was like, well, she never told me I had to pay half the bill, you know. So it was very, very interesting, but to hear the history of the dynamic as well. And there may have been a touch of mental illness there, but I felt really sad just, like, dropping him off at a transit station, not knowing what was going to happen to him. But at the same time, throughout the ride, I affirmed that humanity in him. I affirmed that, you know, what he is going through is valid. And, you know, he was like, oh, I'm too fat. He couldn't put a seatbelt on. And I'm like, you're the same size as I am. And he was like, but I can't breathe when I tie my shoes. And, you know, I have to hold my breath. I guess I have to strengthen my core. And that turned into us talking about just, you know, simple exercises or whatever.
Okay.
But just being able, you know, to affirm that humanity and what God has gifted me with. You started your show by saying, God gifted me. And you, I thought you were going to talk about all the wonderful gifts that you have, like the ability to be such a divine light and spirit that you are, and to write these pieces that incite us to our remembrance of our divinity, and that we have manna. Like you said, the manna, it comes, you know. And, you know, you said me, and I'm like, no. But then I thought about it. Like, that dude had a probably had a better day than he would have had if he had had a different driver.
Indeed.
You know, you got somebody coming out with all this stuff in the, you know, wrapped in the blanket. It actually was a poncho, but at first glance it looks like a blanket. That person may have automatically canceled the ride and said, I feel unsafe.
Right.
Because
right.
There's a stigma associated with homelessness. And, you know, I'm just blessed to be able to, the interactions that happen, it's not like I go out and look for them. You know, I like to go walking and I might walk past somebody and they say, hey, do you know where I can get something to eat? And I have said without a single thought, hey, come with me.
Mm.
You know, and I actually had a husband and wife that were homeless that came to my home. I fixed them a plate. I gave them the leftovers, you know. And for me, if that's all I can do, that's what I can do. But I'm grateful to be able to do that, you know. There's a local grocery store here. They have a whole shelf of in the back of the store of clothes, free clothes. So I tell them, I need a coat.
Okay.
Well, you know, go over to this store over here and get you a coat. Go over to the store over here. I have an interview. Go over to that store over there and get you an outfit for this interview.
Oh, that's
you
nice.
You know, I had homeless teenagers living in my backyard for a while, and I didn't know it. You know, I had my tent pitched back there, and I hardly ever went in there. They were living in the tent. You know.
Wow.
So
yeah.
It's like the homelessness is right at our door. Like you said, it's at your friend's door. It's in the bridge, and it's sometimes sad to see people with this mindset of, well, why do they live there? Why don't they just go away? Why don't they just get a job? Well, do you know if you don't have a job, you can't get if you don't have an address, you can't get mail, right?
Right,
you have
right.
to have mail to prove your identity nowadays, you know?
Yeah.
So there's levels and steps to this that a lot of people don't understand. But when we start looking at people, at homeless people, as people, they're not homeless because home is where the heart is. Home is where you are.
Mm-hmm.
They're houseless. They're displaced. And even when my family was in that position, I never said we were homeless. Most people did not know. I said, we're in transition.
Okay. And thank you for that correction, because there's another lady that's going to be joining us in a few weeks, and she was saying the same thing. Not necessarily directly to me, but her thing is from houseless to housed, you know, instead of saying homeless. So thank you for that. I'll have to remember that.
You're welcome.
So tonight,
one of the other, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you, and you can answer it after you have made the statement that you're getting ready to make now, but where do you think this came from? You know, was it a part of your upbringing? I know you said that there were some situations where you were raised, but where do you think this inner drive for you to help others, where do you think did someone spark that in you to help others, or was it just, you know, who you've always been?
I can't say that it's who I was always, because, you know, I was a kid. I was carefree. Kids want to have fun. We don't necessarily want to help, but we do want approval. So, you know, children usually want that approval by being helpful or whatever. But I had a very, my family had a very strong foundation in family. Like, my family's very, very big. And so no one was ever homeless in our family knew of. And if they were, it was because they chose to be. I have a family member who will say, you know, I was on drugs and I chose not to come around at that time. But, you know, and not just that they had, you know, houses and they housed family members. My great-grandmother and her sisters would have a fish fry here in Atlanta every Friday. And when I first came to Georgia, and I don't, you know, try to name drop too often, but it was a poignant thing on me because I didn't know till years later when someone apologized for running them away, that at the fish fry, you know, they sell plates and to, you know, benefit the church or whatever, but also they feed the homeless. And so I remember when I first came here, I was 18 years old and I'm out in the front yard at the fish fry, and this guy comes up and we're talking, and he, you know, I don't know if, you know, he could afford a plate. I don't remember the details, but I just remember talking to this guy. He had a beautiful smile, and we were talking about plays and poetry and, you know, and writing. And I'm having a great conversation, and my cousins are like, hey, I have a family name. I'm not going to say that, but they call me a certain
name. Okay, okay.
Like, come over here.
Yeah, yeah.
Come over here. And so, you know, I went in the house to go write my phone number down for this guy. Not, you know, I won't say I was not flirting. I probably was. I don't know. I was 18. But I liked the conversation. Like, we were really deep into the, like, I was telling him how I almost didn't graduate high school because I was failed for writing a play that teacher deemed was too religious. And so, I came back out and he was gone. Years later, you know, a family member was like, you know, I'm sorry for messing up things with Tyler Perry. I'm like, who? What?
Really?
But I never forgot that smile. I never forgot his smile. So I was like, oh, my God. Do you mean I could have?
They had no idea,
really,
right?
Instilled in me. Yes. You know, they had no idea. They just said, oh. I remember them saying when I came back out, oh, you can't talk to him. He's homeless. He's 28. And I'm like, we're not talking like that. We're talking art, you know, because art was so important to me. And it still is.
Yeah.
Like, I had to rebirth that love. But the love and the idea of helping, it definitely came from my family because everybody had, you know, everybody did what they did. My great-grandmother, she sewed. So, you know, you want to help out, you want to give her the meals or, you know, give her the cloth or whatever. It's like when you're a child and you're growing up, and times are very different now, you know.
Yeah,
but when you're
growing
up, when people practice trades and you're curious and you want to learn, you do find yourself helping, you know.
Yeah, it's altogether
just
different.
Later on in life,
it
was a trauma response. You know, you want to be accepted and you want to be liked it. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No. I was just saying, you know, because as you were talking, and we got a caller too, I'm going to open up your line in just a minute. When you were talking, I was thinking when you were saying, like, nobody was ever homeless, you know, in our family. And I was like, yeah. And I thought about the number of people that stayed with me, you know, had big families, and we just kind of made room, and, you know, they fit wherever they fit. But nobody was out on the street without a place to live. And I remember my mother, well, all of us, because after a while, you know, my mother kind of turned the meal making over to her children to prepare the meals. We each had a part of it to cook. And we would go and take plates to the older people up and down the street, you know, and stuff like that, or someone that was having a hard time. And so we were raised in that type of environment where nobody went hungry unless they just didn't tell anybody about what they were going through, you know. So,
right.
Yeah. And I don't know if we have that anymore. So let me get this caller, and then we'll come back to your statement. So, caller, would you give us your name and your contribution to the conversation, please?
Good evening. Ken 60, you are wonderful. This is M. Safiri, 240. I wanted to agree with both of you. There was no homeless in the 40s, 50s, even to the middle 60s. because in my neighborhood where I grew up, and I grew up in a small town up in the north, you knew when something was out of place in a family. When a family member had left and nobody knew what happened, they knew. I know in my community, we knew Miss King's son was not home, or if she was sick or her cousin was sick. It was just that type of community. And so I agree with you. There was no homelessness. And particularly if your family was in the south, if they traveled to the north, if your family was in the east and they traveled to mid-central states, you traveled to a family member's house or a friend of the family's house.
Mm-hmm.
So you definitely had some place to go to. And you left with a bag of clothes and food. May not have had a lot of money, but you had enough to get you to your destination. I wanted to say that most part. But also, looking the other way, in our day of the millennium years, we're all one step away from being homeless. I don't care mm-hmm. how high in society you are, or middle class, or mid-middle class, or lower class, one step away. So we can't afford to really look away. And I'm also reminded that of what I wanted to also say is I believe when I look at the homeless community, there are ranks in their community. Whether they live all in one particular area, there's always, I want to say, the player, the one who knows who's who in the circle, the one who knows all of the resources, where you can go and who you can go to get what mm-hmm. to. And you have, and I really do believe you have to be invited in if you're going to stay in their camp. And as far as I think Natasha mentioned about clearing the homeless from under the bridge, you know, and that was very, very humanitarian. They took those people's things and dumped them in the garbage. That's all mm-hmm. those people had. And they just mm-hmm. did another clearing again in Atlanta. Just wipe mm. all their stuff and let it go. Where are they going?
Exactly.
What will they use? You know what I'm
yeah.
saying?
Well,
that is so unhumanitarian. But once again, they have a class inside their own community that they respect one another. I mean, I really do believe that. Just like what is called the norm of society, and I'm going to use this as a loose illustration. The pastor of the church is the person that you look up to, his wife, his children. Then you have the deacon boards and all of that. The same is within their community. They may not look and sound dressed the way we do, but they are respectable, and above all, they have feelings.
Yeah,
they
yeah,
have
for sure.
feelings. And so I believe, and I have helped homeless. I mean, today I'll say if they ask me for a dollar, I don't. If I'm going in the store, what do you need out the store? Because I can bring you something back out or come mm-hmm. in the store with me. But I really don't have the cash flow I would get. And if I do, I would.
Yeah.
Because I remember, yeah. And the last thing I want to say, I remember going to, I was traveling off the interstate on to Old Navy. And I had stopped this particular morning at Dunkin' Donuts, and I think I had a coffee and a bun or something. And so one of the homeless people came up to the car and asked me, I said, oh, here, you can have this here. They was just as happy and pleased,
mm-hmm.
very happy and pleased with what I gave them. And it's nothing like giving somebody who's really asking for something, you know. And that we don't know if they're asking to take it back to the camp or back to save
That's
it for
true.
Later. But
they may have
when
children,
they ask,
you know.
Right.
Yeah.
We don't
yeah.
know just because they're looking
right.
at them. And as Tasha said, they prefer to be on the street than to be in a shelter because they're mistreated.
Some.
And another thing yeah. I did here in this conversation is sometimes I've worked in institutions where it has been abuse. I mean, I really
right.
can't work in institutions anymore
well,
because –
M. Safari, I thank you for your comments, but I'm going to return to Tyasha and let her
yes.
go. Yeah, sure. Dig a little bit deeper into her thoughts and what the work that she's doing, and then we'll be back with you. Okay.
Okay, because it's so vital.
Okay.
Vital.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. We appreciate your concerns.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Mm-hmm. I think I came
on. I love M. Cecilia.
Okay?
She's one
okay?
of the elders. She's one of the
yeah.
elders that I speak to when I need
am I,
some guidance.
Am I muted?
Not yet.
I'll mute you right now.
Go ahead, Tasha.
No, I was just saying I appreciate M. Cetheria's viewpoint. She's one of the elders that I go to when I seek guidance. we study a different science together,
okay.
The law of time, and in that there's archetypes, and we're the same archetype, the sun. So, you know, if the sun gets hot, it pops off. So I always call her when I'm ready to pop off. But she brought up some very valid points, you know, like,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know, what does happen to our homeless community. And having been in Atlanta since the 90s, what I've seen, especially when the Olympics came here, when the Super Bowl came here, our homeless
yes.
population would suddenly disappear.
Yeah.
They would suddenly
yeah.
disappear. The streets would be pristine. And what I noticed in more recent years is that when they return, they have tents. And so,
mm-hmm.
again, walking the streets of Atlanta, I'm never really scared when anyone approaches me. A lady I recently spoke to, you know, she was helping me during, you know I've had my challenges as well. So during
yeah.
my transition, she was like, hey, you know, I'm at one of those stands to give away free phones and we're just talking. And she's like, oh, well, they put us up in a hotel. Like, they told me. They shipped us off to Athens and put us up in a hotel, and they're going to help me get an apartment. And so they go through their protocols and they see who meets the criteria to get an apartment. You know, if you have children or, you know, certain disability, they work through whatever resources and systems they can use to help the people get more stable. But I do find it very interesting. I'm like, they just disappear and they come back with brand new tents. Another
that
thing
is amazing.
That, you know, on one hand, I would want to commend the city, but on the other hand, I'm like, you did take everything from under the bridge over by Grady and throw it away. Or, you know, I don't know that part, but according to Insafiri, you know, and I've seen different videos of different cities around the country where they're putting up spikes underneath the bridges and they're putting big blocks in places so that the people can't camp. And so, you know, even here, I look at the neighborhood association pages and, you know, apps like Nextdoor, and I read what people are saying, you know, oh, we're complaining about the homeless behind this gas station, or they live over in the overpass. Well, if you made it impossible for them to live where they could live, where they had a bridge and they had some covering and protection
mm-hmm.
from the elements, and now they have to live
mm-hmm.
out in the trees, and you see them lined up along the highway, what do you think was going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, well, we don't want
well,
here. They're going to go somewhere else.
Yeah. You remember the parks in the city, and a few years back, they put all of those borders up where people couldn't get inside the park, and that's where people were living at the time. And I don't think there was any special event, you know, like the Olympics or Super Bowl or anything like that. But that just really, it grabbed my heart in such a hard way. Like, why would you do that? You know, like just barring people from being able to go to the park, let alone, you know, to sit and have conversation and stuff like that. So, yeah, there are some wickedness is what I'm going to call it in the handling of people and situations that's living out, you know.
There definitely is some, and, you know, I'm not going to say turn a blind eye to and act like it's not happening, because there are those who are even taking advantage of those people, you know. Oh, I'll put you
mm-hmm.
in my program and my service. Oh, let's get you some disability since you're diagnosed, and then I'm going to take all your money and give you, buy your, you know, some noodles to live off of all month, and, you know, document
yeah.
what I'm doing with your money, and it's not fully true. But there are
yeah.
people who are having group homes and actually, you know, making sure that the people are okay. I met some people in my community who do that. And the thing I want to bring a point to what M. Cetheria said is they do have a hierarchy. They have a community. I spoke to an author recently. He said, I want to put the commune back in community. And a commune is a group of people living together and sharing possessions
hmm.
and responsibilities.
Right.
So
right.
just Thursday, I met a lady, and it was so funny because I always say God got jokes, you know. I'm standing off, you know, getting a vehicle worked on, and I'm standing off to the side of the parking lot just looking at the signs on the other buildings. And, you know,
having my herbal remedy. And the lady comes up and says, hey, you got another one of those? And I gave it to her. And my first thought was something the elder said to me. It says, you know, if you love me, why would you give me, you know, they saw me smoking a cigarette. And they go, well, if you love me, why would you give me that? Well, you asked for it, you know.
Right,
so I almost
right.
didn't want to give it to her because I'm like, I love you. I don't want to give this to you. I'm trying to stop myself. And I am stopping. It's not trying to. I am. It's just a, you know.
Like, yes,
you,
I do.
You know, I started when I was 12, and I stopped many times. But
yeah.
So, you know, we end up having a conversation. And for me, when I meet them, I usually just listen. I let them talk about whatever they want to talk about. God has gifted me that people feel comfortable talking to me. I just listen. Mm-hmm. And as I'm listening to her, I realize, hey, I've seen you walk up and down these streets. I remember you. She told me, you know, about her life and, you know, some of the things she used to do to make money. And and that's another thing in these communities, you know, we want to call the police on people that we see making a living selling certain things, you know, and like at the end of the day, it's your body and it's not crack, so leave them alone. But, you know, I get it. So I was like, I remember you because I would see you every so often. And I said, you every time you, she mentioned her time incarcerated, and I said, well, every time you came out, you were sicker. I remember... I said, did you have locks? She said, yeah, they made me cut my locks off in prison because, you know, they said I couldn't have them because I'm a white girl or whatever. But just in remembering her, I was like, wow. You know, and the first thing she said in the beginning of the conversation after she asked for a cigarette, we started talking. I'm like, hey, what's your name? And she goes, Destiny. And, of course, I start laughing because I'm like, God, that
yeah.
You know, I'm like, God, he's always trying to show me, you know. That I'm on the right path or whatever. And it was just so amazing because she took me back to where she was living behind this on the side of this bowling alley, and she was showing me and telling me, you know, so-and-so used to live there, so-and-so used to live there. This is a skate park that this particular gentleman owns. It was created for the honor and dedication of his son, but, you know, people started hanging out here doing the wrong things. But, you know, this person, and she really showed me, like, it is a community, okay. She was showing me, like, how she would take things she found and made something else. And, you know, oh, Joey, he went and he would get the food. And there is a hierarchy and there's a community. But, again, there's that sense of shared responsibility and shared possession. And we've become so selfish or programmed, you know, to just want more for ourselves that we don't tend to think about the next person. And I want to thank everybody in Atlanta and the surrounding cities who took care of me and my family when we were in transition or, quote, unquote, homeless, because it was nothing short of a blessing.
You put
such
a different
family.
Spin on, you know, that whole thing around communing with one another and sharing resources and responsibility, and you really have me in deep thought about, so what did happen? You know, where did the breakdown in people that stopped caring and taking care, communing with one another, when did that really begin to break down? Like M. Safari was saying, you know, back in the 50s and 60s, there were no homeless people. I don't remember any. You know, I don't remember Skid Row back then in the Los Angeles area. I don't know if there's a certain district that we call it here in Atlanta, but Skid Row was the homeless section in L.A., you know. But it's just something that
it
really
used to be the Grady Tunnel. It used to be the Grady Tunnel, and then it was near the you know, we had the homeless shelters closed too. That's part of the thing. You start closing down homeless shelters.
Up on Pine. What was that?
Mm-hmm. Peachtree Pine Street.
Yeah. I did a lot of work up in that neighborhood.
The disconnect came. I think the disconnect came when, you know, back in the day it was like, oh, that's just Joe. He just drinks, you know. He just let him go do what he does. And it went from that to, you know, a little bit more of a judgmental
type of mentality, like, well, I ain't gonna keep doing nothing for them if they don't do for themselves. But some people can't do for themselves.
Yeah, you know?
And some people don't trust the systems. Like M. Safiri said, they've gone into the shelters and they've gone into the programs and they ended up more abused and more traumatized. I've met at least in the past two to three months, at least two homeless people who are like, nah, I'll never go back to a shelter. I will never go back to a shelter. And it's not, you know, I know that there are some that's like, well, you know, for me, I considered going to a shelter at one point, but I worked from home, you know, quote unquote, didn't have a home. Well, you can't stay here all day. You have to be out by a certain time. Some people go to the shelter, they're like, well, you got to be back by a certain time, but I don't get off of work until this time, you know. I remember watching Pursuit of Happiness. I remember him running to be back in the shelter at a certain time with his son, standing in line. So there was, you know, there was the resources available, but also the limitations placed on those resources. And then the stigma attached with being homeless. Oh, you're too smart for that. What's wrong with you? Something, you know, what's going on, you know? You know, I'm very transparent, so I'm not ashamed to say that I still am. Like M. Safiri said, everybody is a check away, you know, from being homeless. At the beginning of the pandemic, I had a right before the pandemic happened, you know, I lost a family member, and that kind of triggered me into my mental health issues. And I speak about it transparently because I want people to know that if you have these issues, it doesn't mean you're less of a person. In fact, a lot of times these quote-unquote mental illnesses, they're just imbalances brought on by an extensive lifestyle of stress, you know, and trauma. And sometimes bad choices and bad behavior, you know. If you choose to use a particular drug for a number of years, it affects your brain cells. If you choose, you know, if you don't choose, but you're in an abusive situation for a number of years, it affects how you operate in the world. And so a lot of people don't really understand that. But at the beginning of the pandemic, I had, you know, I had just gotten the place. I had just signed the lease on the place the year before. And so as the pandemic was hitting, you know, people were calling me, hey, can I come stay and this and that. So then when I was in my mental health episode is what I call it, and I wasn't able to take care of things, I'm like, hey, I need you to pay this bill, you to pay that bill. Okay, now we need assistance. There's an assistance program. I need everybody's information so I can get, you know, that we must have the finances provided to these people who are going to provide us some assistance. Well, I'm not giving you that information. They just leave. So, you know, I'm very transparent about this journey because I'm still in it. You know, I'm still in it, even though I'm in a home. But over the pandemic, I counted, I housed 13 people over the pandemic, even while being in the middle of my own mental health episode. So, you know, it's that connection to other people and that caring for other people. And sometimes it can be taken advantage of. But I never thought about that because when we first, the first time I lost my house, I had bought a house. I had my surgery, my spinal surgery, and my income was reduced to like 60% of what it was. And when I bought the house, it was in, you know, one of those mortgage, I don't want to call it a mortgage scam, but it was at the time when they were handing out mortgages like, you know, candy and stuff. And so I didn't educate myself properly on the home buying process. I bought a home with an adjustable rate mortgage. And then having the surgery, my mortgage, you know, I had my surgery, my income was cut. My mortgage went from $900 to $1,100 to, you know, it just kept going up. And I'm talking to the mortgage company like, well, what can you do for me? How can you help me? And you know what they said? They said just that they couldn't the home.
Oh, wow.
They literally told me to abandon the home. And when I did abandon the home, well, I had a flood too. And you know, my house flooded and I could only, the insurance company gave me $1,200 and I needed new floors or subfloors. I'm like, well, $1,200 is not going to get it. I'm paying a $1,200 mortgage and $1,200 in tuition for these children. But, you know, after I abandoned the home, then they're like, well, let's see what we can do for you. No, you already told me to leave. Yeah, I've already upended my family. You know?
Right.
And I just had major surgery. So, yeah, I'm not, you know, it's like I don't have the mental capacity to deal with that. And I think sometimes people don't. But I know we don't have a lot of time left. I wanted I brought that up to tell you about how that process went. You know, from leaving that house, I went to stay with family. But the next time I lost my home, and this is how God works. His God is so beautiful. I had went to stay with family, and a friend of the family, she put us in her house. And we lived there for a while. And then I do what I do. I allow people to come into my home. And after a while, I was actually in a depression. I didn't know it till years later. But I was so in my depression, I wasn't dealing with anything. And I just left. I was like, you know what? Y'all got it. You can have the house. I'm gone. And I went and got an apartment.
Wow.
And I was in that apartment with my three children, a two-bedroom apartment. And again, here comes, you know, the upbringing I had, there was always somebody in the home. No one ever was home. You know, you came to visit, you came to stay with us. So I'm used to people staying with me. A lot of things happen in people's lives. I had a friend, you know, come back from out of town, had, you know, left an abusive relationship. I had some, you know, my neighbor got evicted and was like, hey, can I stay with you so my son can go to school? I ended up having 20 people in a two-bedroom apartment.
Wow.
And I got pregnant. And I was like,
how'd
you
do that with all those people around?
Right, right.
We're not going to talk about that. Just teasing.
You know, people went to work and school and stuff like that. And it was time to renew my lease anyway. I'm like, I'm going to go find something bigger. I drove over to a community where my great-grandmother used to live, and I went to go look at houses over there, and there was one for sale for $13,000. And
oh,
so I was standing there looking at it, and my kids go, can we go say hey to, you know, I don't want to put people's names out there, but Miss Jane. And I was like, yeah, you can go to Miss Jane's house. And she calls me over. She goes, I didn't know you were looking for a house. Call this man here. See, this is the community now.
Mm-hmm.
I called the man. I talked to the man. He said, come on over and see it. He showed me his house. He said, yeah, I live across the street. I used to live in that house. The owner lives out of the country. Let me get him on the phone for you. I talked to this lady. God gave us that house with no deposit. There was no stove and no refrigerator in that house. But when I was in the apartment dealing with the stress of all these people, I was writing. And, you know, they say speak things as though they are or something.
Yes.
You know the quote. I know
right.
you know it.
Right.
So I was writing, you know, because my children were fighting. I was like, my children speak to each other with love and compassion. You know, they can work out their differences without using their hands. And so when we got this house, there's no refrigerator, no stove. I'm in my same notebook. Thank you, God, for a stove. Thank you for a refrigerator, as if we already have it. Thank you that I can go in this kitchen and make good meals. In 7 days, we had a stove and refrigerator without paying for them. So
right,
you can't
right.
tell me there's not a God. So
yeah.
we lived in that house for a few years, and it actually had a detached garage that was an apartment. And one of our friends called, and he was like, I need a place to stay. He actually moved into the garage before we ever moved into the house. You know, and when people don't, you know, sometimes people outgrow each other or people don't uphold their arrangement. I'm like, you know, you got to go. Another family member came to stay with me, and he would watch us have our prosperity rituals. And he, you know, we never joined. But later on, he said, you know, that really works. So when we lost that house, a neighbor said, hey, there's a house around the corner. Let me introduce you to the owner. So, again, that community is there. The community can have an impact on homelessness, especially if we care, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But so many times we want to shame and blame people for why they're in the situation they're in. In this case, the owner had passed away. The wife wanted to short sell me this house. But this is the thing about the community, too. When, like you mentioned, when there's corruption in the system, you don't allow it. The bank did not allow her to short sell that house to me because a certain investor had already put his nose in the air and said, hey, I want it. So he bought that house for 50 grand, you know, fixed it up for another 50, sold it for 150. Right now it's valued at 350, almost, last time I checked, you know, almost $500,000.
Wow.
People are being priced out of our neighborhoods as well.
They are.
But the next house I got was two streets over. And the stress that I had carried for so long, it always would manifest in my body, but it was periodic, you know, periodically being shut down, maybe a day or 3 days. Well, this particular year, 2015, my body shut down on me for 21 days. 21 days I could not eat or use the restroom. I was 95 pounds.
Wow.
And when
and you
we
had
lost
children,
our home,
right? You had small children, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we lost our home because I'm the one that takes care of the bill. That wasn't the dynamic of the relationship that I had with their father, because he came into my life. Hey, you just got out the hospital. You mind if I come over? You need some help? Yes. Come on over. So he came in cooking and cleaning and just, you know, putting in whatever I said. Hey, can you pay the, you know, light bill? But never did I sit down and say it needs to be equal and you need to be prepared to carry this if I'm not well. So when
we
lost that home in 2016, we were floating. And we're a family of eight. I have six children. So I'm grateful for the people who allowed all eight of us to stay with them. I'm grateful for the people who said, you know what, I can't take all eight of you, but I'll take your teenager. And I'll let her stay in my home and go to school. We were separated for a while, you know. But there was a Facebook group. Again, community. There's a Facebook group. And a lady, I was looking, you know, it was called Looking for Housing in Georgia. The lady posted, she said, I've been staying in this hotel, but I've been blessed with a home, and I still have a week left in my hotel. Does anybody want it? And I wish I could remember her name, because she was the first person to house all eight of us.
Wow.
You know? And then there was a lady here in the community on another Facebook group. She said, I was living with my mom at the time. I had went back home with my mom and took my littlest children. And I would come up to the city. I was an hour and a half away, but I'd come up to the city every weekend so my children could see their dad. And I was looking on the group, and she said, I had an accident, and I need somebody to come take my trash out. Well, I need to take her trash out. And then when she found out my situation, well, I was safe with my mom, but that situation, you know, it was a time limit on it. So when the time limit came and I didn't get a place down there, I had to go. So when I came back up for the weekend, and she was like, well, first of all, she got my teenager. My teenager was with someone else, and we had a disagreement. And she said, where's the baby? I'm going to get her right now. So my teenager lived with her first, but she let the whole family come and stay. We stayed for 2 weeks, and then, you know, we went on to the next place. When she moved out of this house, she was like, hey, let me put in a good word for you, you know. But to have a stigma attached to you, like, oh, you just don't pay your bill. No, there's a reason, you know.
Yeah.
So we have to look at people. We have to look at our homeless people, our houseless people, our people in transition, and consider the reason why they're out there. The gentleman I met yesterday, he's out there because he chooses to be out there. He'd rather go out and not know where he's going than have, based off what he told me, have given somebody $1,200 a month and they're still asking for more or demanding more.
Right.
You know, or having been in a program where they say, no, you can't come in here the way you are.
Right. Some powerful stuff. And, you know, like your own testimony and your experiences are really compounded by the number of individuals that you were allowing to come up into where you were living at, you know, certain points and times through what you're saying. So, you know, it's compounded with others as well. You know, you helping other people in their hour of need, and you did in the middle of yours, and you wasn't getting that same type of assistance back from those that were, you know, neatly tucked away and provided for in your homes. Just interesting dynamics. Yeah.
You know, people only do what you allow. And
that's
it was
true.
Necessary for me to grow up and get some boundaries.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we understand that, too. You know, things come to us for us to learn different situations. So, but, you know, I really appreciate you for really going into the situations the way that you have and explaining them so thoroughly for people to understand how these can happen. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not just overnight, you know, and then there you are. But there are a lot of different circumstances that build up and add to that the houseless or in transition stages that we face. So thank you for that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You're welcome. I mean, I think about our mutual coach who told her story of when she was
mm-hmm.
going through that. And to know, you know, I don't know what her pockets look like, but I'm pretty sure she's a millionaire. And to know millionaires who were still
mm-hmm.
trying to build their business and push through while living out of a car. You know,
yeah,
I meet
yeah.
a lot of people. A friend of mine who stayed with me during the pandemic, she left, but she drives rideshare like me, and my car died in January. So she said, hey, go rent from this company. They're a black-owned company, and they give you $150 off a pad split, you know. And so it's just those tiny little resources like that make
yeah,
a difference.
Yeah.
People don't understand
right.
how something so simple can make a difference. So when I met the
yeah.
owner or the manager of the company, I said, why do you do that? And she said, we found out that so many of the people were living in the cars.
Mm. Yeah.
So you have to listen to hear what their situation is and then be willing
mm-hmm.
to provide what you have.
Right. And you were talking about, yeah, you were talking about Tyler Perry earlier and how he showed up at, you know, the family home and stuff. I know, you know, I've heard his story personally from him as he stood in the church pulpit telling, and I was trying to think of the name of the church, it's Bishop Morton. And I've read it, you know, in different interviews that he's done with people, and he was homeless for a lot of time, you know, for a long extended period of time, because he would work and make the money because he was so devoted and so sure of this play that he had written, and he knew that, you know, it just needed the right audience to listen to it. And so by the time he finished, you know, he had become homeless two or three times because he had spent all the money that he had saved during the process, and then he would have to go back to work and then come back and, you know, rewrite the script and add this and do whatever he was doing with it and stuff. And so, yeah, there's a lot of people, I think, that share that same type of situations occurring, you know, that up and down in their life and what they're doing. So it just sometimes we just have to do it that way, you know, to get to our promised land. So
I know if I ever get
yeah,
to meet him, I'm going to ask him if he remembers my great-grandmother.
He probably does. You know, he probably does. You ought to go looking for him and ask him. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, a family member asked me to at one point because when Tyler was shopping one of his first plays, it was given to that family member to help him get some funding. And he tells me the story of how he took it to and who he took it to. And so, I think I may have sent an email or two on that person's behalf, but I have never sought him out because I probably just go all fangirl, see the smile one time and fall down.
I know, right? Say, look, you still had this effect on me because I remember back then, you know, and you didn't even have a big name then. So, yeah, I get it. Yeah, it's, you know, it's all what we do. M. Safari, are you with us?
Yes.
M. Safari. Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
M. Safari.
Am I on? Okay.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I want to comment. Tasha, you're so right. You're stigmatized. Well, as the internal family, you know, I have considered myself homeless because I have had to live with my children. And there's a stigma right there from your own birth birthing of your own children. And if you stand differently, think differently, walk differently in the family, there's the stigma of being the black sheep. And that's also another form of homeless, whether we look at it or not. You know, so it's a thing that you begin to become weary and very leery about who you talk to about your situation. And you cannot get a place, as you said, if you don't have an address and if you don't have a bank account or a job. So how can you embed yourself? And I look at the fact that when people stay with other people and if they get a job, before they get their first check, it's almost like, well, you should be able to afford your food, your clothes, and all of this. Why are you using my stuff and my, I mean, I don't understand that. It takes at least 6 months before you can really see what you're bringing in on a paycheck. That's one. I think also when you talked about shelters, people are distrustful about shelter families. I was astonished to know a family who has male children, if there's no father, the male child cannot stay in the shelter with the women. They are separated and they're put into a male's shelter quarters. Now, if that child, particularly if the child, I think, is like 13, the society, a societal separation, splitting the family. And that's not acceptable. That's definitely not acceptable for me. It's not acceptable for humanitarian or family life at all. So it is a lot of stigma with that. That's what I just wanted to add to the conversation.
Okay. Well, thank you. Appreciate you.
One thing I want to discuss before we go.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so where do we go from here? Yeah.
It's the system. You know, it's time to build a better system. Because, like you said, there's a separation of family in the shelters. There is the fact that you need ID to get ID, so to speak. You know, when I lost my rental in 2015, 2016, actually it was, I got an eviction. Well, with that eviction on your credit, you can't get a place to live. This place that I'm in now was just on a referral. They didn't care about their eviction, but it's so hard to find someone like that because, one, you know, grandma passed away and we don't want to share the house or we don't want to work as a community to maintain the house, so we're just going to sell the house to these investors. And these investors here in Atlanta are sitting on these houses. If you see a house on Zillow for 200 days and it's for rent, they're just collecting application fees from desperate people. And there should be some rules in place to keep them from doing that. You know, what's going on, I'm going to tell you what's going on right now because I have family members who need a home, who make six-figure income but could not get a home because, one, they were self-employed, and, two, there's a bidding war on rental property. A rental that's $1,800, somebody else will come in and offer $2,000. A rental that, you know, and they're driving the price up. A three-bedroom nowadays, the fact that the one that I had was $1,200, now it's $2,700. You're pushing the people out of the neighborhood. You're pushing the people out of the neighborhood. You're gentrifying the neighborhood because they're considered undesirable when there's nothing undesirable about them. You know, and then there's, like you said, there's these stigmas. There's a lady that hangs out at the gas station down the street from me. And, you know, I gave her a ride one day home. And the first thing that the person said was, like, not surprised that she had a home, but they was like, you put her in your car? You see when she walks like that wide-legged, she's pooped her pants. I don't care. If I see her struggling to get up the street and I'm going in that direction, I gave her a ride. And I'm, you know, but there's that stigma that here we are thinking that somebody's homeless and they have a home. They just choose to live a certain way because of the traumas they've been through. So it's like, it's time to stop looking at people as undesirable and less than people. You know, people like to separate themselves from animals. You know, Reverend Sandy, I'm pretty sure you're vegan, you know, and I'm not, but I work towards it. And there's my teachers who say we're blind to the suffering of others. We're blind to the suffering of other creatures, and we think we're entitled to devour their flesh. Mm-hmm. It's the same with our homeless. We're blind to their suffering, and we equate them with animals and ourselves with being something else. But if you were taught basic science in school, it's kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species. We as humans are part of the animal kingdom. So if someone is behaving in a way that you think is animalistic, maybe they're really behaving in a way that's true to their nature, and society has forced them into a box that was never meant for us.
Yeah. Very well said. Very well said.
It starts with recognizing that a person is a person and holding space for them and listening to them without judgment, listening to them objectively, and then asking them the most basic question that most of us who even work or have a, you know, quote-unquote semblance of a life can't answer, which is, what do you need?
Mm-hmm.
Ask
but that's
what
you're doing
need.
With your business. Yeah. That's what you're doing with your organization. That's what you're doing with your organization. Can I help you heal? You know, you're asking, what can I do to help? And then you're providing those outlets for the individuals that have showed up in front of you with whatever resources that you have, like through your writing program and your arts program. Let's take a few minutes and tell about some of the programs that you offer to the community. Because, you know, someone may very well want to make a financial donation to the work that you're doing.
Well, thank you. these programs came about literally just by me doing what I needed to do. So, you know, you and I met through Women Who Can. And when I vended there, if you notice, you know, I came in with incense and waste beads and soap. You know, and those were the things that helped me connect to my body, to connect to what I had been uncomfortable with my whole life, and to, you know, to recognize and love on myself. So when I have these writing programs or these art programs, literally it's for me. It's for me. When we did Writing in the Park, even though it was postponed, it was for me and my children to go sit in the sun and do what we do. It's a blessing that the lady who sparked that idea, she's the ghostwriter and the owner of a company, if you don't mind me saying, it's called Build Your Own Book.
No, go ahead.
And she she recognized in one of my children a certain level of, for lack of a better word, depression. And she was like, hey, let's go write. And so that's how Writing in the Park was born. It was like, hey, let's write about it. Let's get this out. And for me, writing was always my outlet because you hear in some period call me Tasha. You know, so people who know me a long time call me Tasha. That's my little girl name. Tasha didn't know how to speak up for herself. Tasha was raised in an environment that said sit down and be quiet. Children are to be seen and not heard. But I always had a pen and paper and some crayons available, you know. So I started writing. I started drawing. When I couldn't sleep and I was up with pain or up with anxiety or up with things that I didn't know what the name or label was for it at the time, I painted. And when I was in a traumatic relationship, and I don't blame that person because I chose the relationship and I left and I chose to go back. When I was in a traumatic relationship, when I came out, I realized, I said, you didn't write for 5 years. And I used to write every single day. So for me, these are the tools that I use. I'm not recommending to anybody something that I haven't tried unless, you know, it's something that somebody else I know really, you know, and I'll say, hey, this person said such and such works. You know, the homeless guy who said, I can't breathe, I can't tie my shoes. I said, listen, dude, I can't do a push-up to save my life, but you mentioned strengthening your core. Do you plank? And he said, no, what's a plank? You know, Well, I do those, so I'll recommend what I do. But that's how these programs came to be. So what we do now when we vend in places, we bring out canvases and we bring out, so on top of the products that we sell, the T-shirts and the pants, I'm serving an experience. I'm serving a chance for you to reconnect with your inner child, because most of us have an inner child wound. Wherever it came from, it may have come from the parents, it may have come from the school system. My good friend, she says, who dropped you? I say, when did they drop you? Go back to that age and find what you like to do. And M. Safiri, you may love this. One day I was outside having a cigarette, and this guy walks by, and he goes, hey, you got another one? And he comes over and he gets it. And I noticed, I say, here you go, you all right? And he said, no, not really. And Reverend Sandy, you might appreciate this, knowing what you know about the endocannabinoid system and everything. He said, I smoked some herb and I'm having a bad trip. And I said, do you want to sit down? Do you need some water? Have you eaten today? You know, it's just common sense type things, you know. And he's like, no, I didn't eat today. Yes, I like some water. And my community health worker hat was on. Thank you to Morehouse School of Medicine and the neighbors that recommended me, my community that recommended me for the community health worker certification. My community health worker hat came on a little bit. Like, hey, do you have a mental health diagnosis? Yes, I'm bipolar schizophrenic. Well, let me tell you, people who are bipolar schizophrenic should not have certain levels of THC. You may do better with CBD. You know.
Yeah.
Here I am educating him based on my own experience, not just saying, well, you should, but let me tell you what worked for me.
Right.
And in Safiri, this brother's birthday is the day out of time. So she'll get a kick out of that. She knows what that means. But that's a sacred day. It's the day of, here in Atlanta, it actually was proclamated. Baba Wanik is Kimi Tahuti Shabazz from the radio station 89.3. He teaches this science. And he went to the city and asked, however it happened, the day out of time, July 25th, is a day out of time. And in Atlanta, it is celebrated as Global Peace Through Culture Day.
Okay.
And that's a day
we only have a couple
life.
Minutes. Okay, we only have a
it's
couple
a day
minutes.
Of celebrating life through the arts. I'm gonna wrap it up. It's a day of celebrating life through the arts. So for me, it's all about celebrating life through the arts, celebrating that you are a divine point of light through whatever inspires you, whatever kind of artwork that is. That man, I just sat and played his favorite song, and that's all I could do for him that day, and feed him. But that's what I did.
So how can individuals reach out to you to encourage you, to contribute to you, or, you know, just to give you whatever is needed for you to do what you're doing for your Can I Help You Heal organization?
You can follow
me on
like
Instagram. Social media? Okay.
Yes, ma'am. You can follow me on Instagram at Canna Help You Heal, CannaHelpYouHeal. So Canna is the only thing spelled a little bit differently. You can also find me on Linktree/my first name, Taiasha, TAIASHA. And, you can always text 502-21-WRITE, WRITE.
502-21-WRITE?
Yes.
Okay. WRITE. Okay. Well, all right. We got some information to be in contact with you and see you. You said, I don't know if I have enough to last the whole show, and we ran out of time. We're down to like 10 seconds left. And so thank you so much for being with us. You have been such a wonderful guest with sharing all of the personal knowledge and the passion that you have in order to serve our houseless population. So we appreciate you for taking time for being with us, and we wish you well, and we hold you up in the highest of consciousness for making your positive changes in the community and in the world at large. So thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having me, everyone. Just remember, yes, it starts with yourself. love
yourself,
thank
you,
love
thank
the community.
You. Yes. And so remember, you guys, I'm going to say this real quick. On Instagram, Canna Help You Heal, C-A-N-N-A, Help You Heal. Linktree is Taiasha, T-A-I-A-S-H-A. And you can reach her at 502-21 Wright, W-R-I-T-E. So thank you, everybody, for being with us. Join us again next week for another show discussion around houselessness. I got to get that one right. And so we appreciate you, and thank you for listening, participating. And remember, it's all about life. It's all about love, and it's all about wellness. And just remember, at the end of any day, it's always your choice. You can have a healthier lifestyle, frame of mind, consciousness, or you can choose something entirely different. I love you. Be safe, and we'll see you next week. Thanks again, Taiasha.
Thank you, Reverend.
Love and wellness.